Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christensen. Definitely go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Go snag your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great little study guide if you're taking pharmacology classes and or just looking for a little refresher in your clinical practice as well. But yeah, go snag that for free. Follow along, get updates when we got new podcasts out and stuff like that too. So very kind of neat resource that you can get your hands on at no cost to you there. All right, so the drug of the day today is valacyclovir. Brand name of this medication is Valtrex. I have covered acyclovir in the past, which definitely has some similarities, but there are some differences here as well. First, I wanted to mention valacyclovir. It is, in effect, a prodrug where the component itself is actually converted pretty quickly by the body into acyclovir, which has antiviral type activity. The most common indications I see this medication used for: varicella zoster infections, herpes simplex viruses, cold sores, as well as genital herpes. Both those, it will have some activity there. It has been shown in studies to have some benefits there. I have seen it used longer term as well, to prevent, not just to treat as short-term therapy, but to prevent or suppress herpes infections in the longer term as well. Most commonly, I would say, that's going to be done in patients that don't have a great immune system. So, you know, maybe patients with HIV or something along those lines. Mechanistically, so if we think about valacyclovir getting converted to acyclovir, acyclovir basically gets phosphorylated to a triphosphate form, which then interrupts viral, interrupts DNA synthesis and ultimately interrupts viral replication. Now, if you remember, the virus naturally wants to use deoxyguanosine triphosphate, but DNA polymerase will incorporate acyclovir triphosphate into the viral DNA, which then, you know, prevents that viral replication, basically interferes with the process of the virus replicating by interfering with that DNA polymerase. All right, so adverse effects. GI upset, I would say, is the most common one I've seen in clinical practice. Drug can be taken with or without food. I typically recommend just doing it with food, so we, you know, kind of avoid the risk, or at least reduce the risk of potential GI upset if we do it with food there. Rarely, there can be some CNS changes, delirium-type symptoms, confusions, hallucinations, and this is definitely going to be more problematic or has a higher likelihood of occurring in our elderly and or those with poor renal function, which oftentimes our renal function declines over time, so poor renal function sometimes goes hand-in-hand with as a patient ages. Other adverse effects, rare increases in liver function tests. Now, in the short term, a very, you know, acute course of valacyclovir, you know, 10-day course or something, it's probably not something I'm crazy worried about. You might look at patients' past history. Do they have issues or concerns that may, you know, cause you a little hesitation, like, you know, liver toxicity in the past or something? That is something to keep tabs on. Probably more likely to run into issues if we're doing suppressive therapy, and that's really probably where we're going to more closely monitor those patients over time, making sure those LFTs are remaining okay, maybe looking out for other liver toxic medications and things of that nature. Let's touch on kinetics here a little bit, kind of tacking on to the adverse effect profile. So acyclovir is primarily eliminated in the urine, and as I mentioned, central nervous system adverse effects may be a little bit more likely in patients with poor kidney function. And as you can expect, acyclovir being primarily eliminated through the urine, as that kidney function gets worse, we basically excrete less of the drug out through the urine, and it can start to accumulate and cause some of those issues. So definitely important to think about the pharmacokinetics of acyclovir and valacyclovir, and recognizing that this drug is eliminated pretty extensively through the kidney is important, because it can accumulate for sure. Administration. So this is probably the biggest difference between valacyclovir and acyclovir, or at least the biggest clinically significant difference. Valacyclovir, Valtrex, is dosed twice a day, which is obviously much nicer than acyclovir, which you know, is given usually in the range of 3 to 5 times per day. So keeping patients on schedule, patient adherence, so very important. As we add more and more medications throughout a patient's day, the likelihood that they stay on top of those medications, take them all appropriately and on time, as they should, gets worse as we add more and more doses to that regimen. So that's probably one of the biggest differences and clinically significant advantages of Valtrex or valacyclovir, is that it is less frequent dosing. Monitoring parameters. I mentioned the issue with LFTs potentially there. Also, we're going to obviously, you know, monitor renal function, particularly if we're running into issues. But, you know, oftentimes renal function, LFTs, and there are some rare CVC complications that can happen. These are labs that are, you know, very routinely checked in patients over time. Now, a younger patient, they might not have labs on file for a significantly longer period of time. Any geriatric patient that's on a few medications for, you know, blood pressure or diabetes or, you know, just about anything, we're checking renal function and liver function and CBC on a pretty regular basis anyway. But it is important to note that particularly I get more concerned with longer-term therapy. Those are something we would check out. In the shorter term, obviously, if you identify issues, if there's clinical symptoms indicative of, you know, any sort of liver impairment, obviously you're going to take a peek at that and look at those labs there. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we will wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, BCGP, ambulatory care, or board-certified medication therapy management exam, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. If you're a student, we've also got NAPLEX links there as well to content over at rxgrad.com, so definitely go follow the links at meded101.com/store. If you're a healthcare professional just looking to learn a little bit more about medication management, some of the clinical common sense things that we look at when reviewing medications, monitoring medications, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. Got a growing list of books and resources, drug interactions, also free Audible books. If you've never tried an Audible book, go take advantage of that. You can get an 8 to 10 hour free book on clinical pearls, case studies, drug interactions, whatever you're interested in. Your first book from Audible is free. So I've got all those links to those resources at meded101.com/store. All right, so finishing up on drug interactions, I would say there's not a ton of clinically significant drug interactions with valacyclovir, so that's definitely a nice thing there. I think about additive adverse effects, so liver toxicity I mentioned there. Also, mild CYP1A2 inhibition can happen from valacyclovir. And if you remember some of those agents that are metabolized by CYP1A2, probably the two most common examples I've seen used in clinical practice, tizanidine, an older skeletal muscle relaxant, and then clozapine, which is an antipsychotic, definitely notable for agranulocytosis and other boxed warnings as well. So those two, I would say it's probably not strong clinically significant, but it is there. And concentrations of tizanidine or clozapine could go up. CYP1A2, also theophylline, I did want to mention. It's been a really, really long time since I've seen anyone on theophylline because there is so many drug interactions and adverse effects and risk for toxicity, and we've got a lot safer medication options in COPD and other respiratory disorders that we would use theophylline for. So, again, it is broken down by CYP1A2, but the likelihood that you see a patient on that medication is pretty low. And then the last thing I did want to mention with valacyclovir is you've got to think about live vaccines, particularly live vaccines that are viruses. So the varicella vaccine, for example, if you've got a patient taking valacyclovir, it could interfere with the response to that vaccine. You may not get quite as robust a response. So definitely important, I think, to remember that. It doesn't happen incredibly often, at least in my practice, that you run into that. But think about those live vaccines, particularly with varicella, because valacyclovir can be used in that setting to help blunt that type of infection. So as you can imagine, it also might blunt the effects from a live vaccine that, you know, requires replication and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. If you enjoyed the podcast, do us a huge favor. Help us grow the audience. You know, share us, you know, with colleagues, friends, email listservs you're on. Definitely share us as a resource, a trusted resource to provide medication education, basically. And then in addition to that, if you've got, you know, a quick second, leave us a rating and review on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening on. That also helps us get more exposure and grow the audience. It's greatly appreciated. And of course, you can get updates to when we have new podcasts as well as new information, educational materials. We also keep you in the loop on that at reallifepharmacology.com. Sign up and get that top 200 study guide. So I'm going to sign off for today. I thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.